Hey, 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 good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is your host, Rachel Coudron, the owner of Etsy Boutique Coudron's Curiosities and the copywriter of RC Copywriting. Today, I have a very, very special lady with me, and I would love for her to introduce herself.
Hey, my name's Colette, and I am here in the UK. I'm a single mama to a two-year-old tornado toddler. As you can imagine, they are full of crazy energy, and also guardian to my 17-year-old sister, who I've had since she was five. So she's technically like my daughter as well. And then for what I do for a job is I'm actually a holistic mindset coach and Rose Reiki therapist. So my passion is really empowering women on their journey to like self-love and supporting their mental well-being.
Oh, that's wonderful. And one of the things you mentioned that really captured my attention was a rose quartz therapist. Is that what you said?
Rose Reiki.
Rose Reiki. Oh, tell me about that. So because I don't know any, I mean, I've heard of Reiki, but I don't know about Rose Reiki.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So at the beginning of the year, I'd already planned to go on like my like traditional Reiki journey. And mm-hmm. I was in someone's group in Facebook, and she's really into angelic Reiki and lots of different variations. And she started talking about Rose Reiki, and something just connected with me because it's all about the divine feminine. It's all about enhancing self-worth, self-love, self-belief. And the energies come from like the feminine ray, and it comes the like, gosh, I'm trying to explain, like divine feminine archetypes are like Mary Magdalene, Mother Mary, Lady Nada, Kuan Yin, Isis. So all these like goddesses, powerful like women, their energy is harnessed from them. So it's still got the traditional healing properties of normal Reiki, but then it's got this added in as well for like that extra kind of like wow factor. So when I heard it, I'm like, yes, please sign me up. I want to get involved in some of this now. Because I didn't actually realize there's actually like over, I think it's maybe 40 different types of Reiki. Like, so there's not just one, and there's lots of different umbrellas underneath that as well. So there's actually a lot more than what we even really know about, which is just fascinating.
It really is, because for me, I only knew of one type of Reiki that existed. And so for you to tell me there was 40, well, I was already mind blown with just one variation. Yeah. So 40, I'm just like, whoa, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it's just amazing. There's just always different, just all the different energies. Like, so that woman, she does like angelic Reiki, so she harnesses all like the powers from the angels. And there's just all different types, like geo one, because like geos, like the geo shapes, there's loads. It's just, I don't even know them all to tell you them all, but like I'm fascinated in like learning all about them. It's just so interesting.
It really is. Well, thank you for sharing with us.
That's okay.
So Colette, I would like to ask you, what were some of the defining moments in your life that shaped who you are?
Well, where do I start? I feel like I could write like a book, like, or several books on my life and things that have happened. But the big key standout things, really, for me, like my childhood, 100%, I had an alcoholic mum. My dad wasn't really present that much, and it kind of really made me have to grow up quickly. It wasn't like, see, in my eyes, it was like a bad childhood. Like, but obviously this is like my view then as a child. But I just, looking back now, when people say to me, like, you know, most kids shouldn't be like cooking their tea at like 9 and do 9 and all the rest of it. But to me, it was like normal. So that definitely shaped who I was, like, you know, being the eldest and taking on a lot of responsibility that like most kids shouldn't have to do, for sure. And then going through depression, that was like a big thing. And part of the reasons for that were definitely stemmed from my childhood, 100%. I think I just suppressed so much. I never talked about anything. It wasn't really the done thing to do to talk about stuff. And I just kept on suppressing stuff, and it just got to a point where like it exploded, as it does, doesn't it? Like, you know, if you've got a lid on a boiling pot of water, eventually like, you know, that lid's gonna like come off, isn't it? And that's what happened to me. So that was, yeah, definitely a defining moment. And the final one was becoming a single mum. And that's just kind of took me on this whole other journey as well. But yeah, there's quite a few. I mean, there's lots of little ones intertwined, but I'd say big standout ones, like definitely those for sure.
Wow. And I appreciate you sharing that with us. And if you don't mind, we'll go into a little bit more detail on some of them. Yeah. And one of the ones, the first one that you said that you grew up with an alcoholic mother, it actually triggered a memory in me where before I moved to France, I was a teacher in inner city, Oklahoma City. And these children that I worked with, and many of them had lived through very traumatic experiences, and they more than often than not, they came from impoverished families, alcoholic families, drug abusing families, mm-hmm. types of things. And I will never forget one of the first experiences I ever had at that school. Is a little boy came up to me in third grade. He was 9. And the very first day of school, one of the first interactions he had with me, and he just said, it was just so matter of fact. It was like, well, you know, last night my mom did drugs, she drank alcohol, and then she mm-hmm. was passed out. And my mom is an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
It just very much, like, he didn't even skip a beat. There was no... Yeah. There was no emotion around what he was saying. It was just matter of fact. Like this, mm-hmm. these are the thing. This is my life. And it was really shocking to me. One, because I came from a middle-class white family, white community predominantly, where I grew up, and I chose to teach at a more diverse community and also inner city, which was very different from where I grew up. And it was shocking for me that he was so honest, but also like the lack of emotion, like mm-hmm. just how things were.
Yeah.
And when you referred back to like yourself making your own tea or cooking for yourself at 9, it was just, for me, it brought me back to that state, because I am certain that he does the same. And for him, it mm-hmm. was just, that's how life is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how it feels. I think it's like, it's your way of protecting yourself. You know, if you start like feeling emotional about things, like obviously you're not really going to cope as well. And if you don't know any different as well, that was all I kind of knew. I knew it wasn't really right. Obviously I knew it wasn't right. Like, you know, sometimes mum would be in bed too, like either drunk or hungover to take us to school. And I used to take me and brother to school because I didn't want to miss school. Like at first it was fun, you know, it's fun, you know, having a couple of days off school, but it got to a point where I'm like, no, like I want to go to school. I want to go and like learn. So I used to take us. So no one really knew what was going on because I kind of like managed to take us, like, you know, we didn't slip on, like we didn't, you know, alert anybody to like anything was going on really. They could just see two kids going to school. So they saw nothing wrong, but it was just normal. Like it, to me, I didn't really know any different.
I think it's important that people hear that, because I think people that are removed from the situation will have never experienced it or never had any experiences with children from families that have alcoholic parents or drug abuser parents or that kind of thing. They are far and removed from the situation. And so they think, oh, well, it would be obvious. It would be mm-hmm. obvious that these kids are having problems, or that the parents are abusing their children, or and you know, not being supportive for them. But in reality, what I've seen time and time again, and what you're telling me from teaching in impoverished communities, is that really the children, you learn they're incredibly resilient, and they learn to take care of themselves.
Yeah,
like. They're not being supported and cared for at school, and as an essential need that we need a community and we need to feel loved, then they're going to do whatever is necessary to get them to that place where they do. And for many of them, it's school.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And you can see how many kids slip underneath the radar. You can see it. I mean, even if like people knew, like parents are very good at lying anyway as well. But even the kids themselves, a lot of time they don't want to even like admit there's problems to anyone, because they still love their parents. At the end of the day, they're still their parents, and they fear what's going to happen if they say anything. So you are kind of like stuck in that place, and you do your best to survive, basically. That's what you do. You just get on and like you do stuff because you don't know any different.
Yeah, Exactly. And going back to the human needs, that humans need to feel safe and they need to feel secure and they need to feel, they need to have that security. And so many, that's why many spouses or children protect the perpetrator or the situation, because they fear that their security is going to be disrupted if they tell the truth. And they have managed to sort themselves to feel comfortable within the situation. And so then you're asking them to disrupt their continuum again. And they're like, no. Like, there's nothing that you can tell me that will encourage me to do so.
It's sad, but it's true. That is literally kind of what happened.
Thank you for sharing. And
I feel like
it must have a massive impact on you and made you very independent at a very young age and very self-sufficient. And like, if I need to do it, I need to do it myself.
It probably had a negative impact, like too much so. I was too independent, like to a point. Not wanting to let other people in was always a big thing of mine, you know. Just always the one that wanted to do everything for myself, always. And it definitely stemmed from that. So when like people then do show me like, so, well, not now, I'm fine now because I've been on a bit of a journey myself, but before, if people showing me like, you know, kindness or even love, like I never really had that as such. So I found even that was like really difficult for me to kind of grasp. It's like, oh, what's this? This is a bit too much. It's a bit weird, like back up. Cause I wasn't used to it. I was just used to just me doing all the stuff. So yeah, it wasn't just like that as well. It definitely affected my relationship with alcohol as well, personally as well, which I didn't really make the connection before, and I don't know why I didn't, but I started drinking around parks at a young age, like a lot of people do. Like, I don't know where you're from, but around here, like 13, 14, like kids are like on parks, which yes, obviously they're not supposed to be. But then growing up, once I turned 18, like I drank a lot of alcohol, and I think I drank to deal with my emotions, like shut things out. You know, if ever I got stressed, rather than addressing why I got stressed, the first thing was like a glass of wine or whatever. And I wouldn't say I was an alcoholic, but like, because I could go ages without drinking, but then if I drank, it would be like, you know, you say, like, once you stop, you're like, once you pop, you can't stop. It would be like that. It'd be like, I would drink quite a lot, and I'd probably go like through cycles like that. But yeah, stressful moments or dealing with emotions, 100% always reach for the bottle. And it's not until like now, and I look back and I see like where that's all come from, because it was just normal. Like, alcohol was around all the time. Like, I didn't really know what else to do. So for me, it was just very normal to just like, oh, I've had a bad day, get a bottle. I'm feeling stressed, get a bottle. And that was it. I didn't know any different. But I no longer drink now. I'm literally 7 months today now. I'm 7 months sober. So I have no intention of ever going back, like none at all, because I can see now like kind of the damage it's caused. And I know way much more about alcohol that like I didn't know before, where I just think, no, like, it's not for me, not at all. So yeah.
Wow, huge congratulations.
Thank you.
7 months sober, that's massive.
Yeah, it was crazy. It's just kind of like crept up on me now. I mean, it was a bit of a journey. It took me like 4 attempts last year to do it. Like I said, which it sounds like mad, because like I said, I wasn't like, I don't really like the term alcoholic as well anyway, but I wasn't like drinking every day, but like I knew that, like, you know, I was probably thinking about it, or it was like coming up quite a lot. And it took me four solid attempts. Like, I thought it'd be easy. I thought, you know, because I don't really drink a lot, but it was just, I felt like I was faced with a lot of challenges, and every time something came up, it was like, oh, drink again. And I just kept on resetting. I got to the final point, like December last year. And I just thought, right, this now or never. Well, I originally told myself my 40th birthday, I'll have one big blowout on my 40th birthday, and then like that would be it. But then that blowout turned into like another couple of weeks. And then I just remember like drinking one of the evenings, and I felt rubbish. And I just kind of almost like played it forward, like to the future, like, you know, is this where I see my life? Do I want to be my mum? Like, all these thoughts came into my head, and I just thought, no, like this absolutely stops right now. I poured my wine down the sink. I like made myself a sober Instagram page, because before I didn't really tell a lot of people, which I think was like my green light to kind of drink again. So I made it very public, and I was like, right, I'm going sober. And like, yeah, and I've stuck to it, and it's definitely been a lot easier now, I think, as well, because I've been more like accountable and stuff. But yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, really, to first to have the confidence and the strength to say I'm going to do it and to stick to it is really, really massive, because you run into personal obstacles, you run into mental obstacles, but more than that, you also run into like societal obstacles where people want to, hey, you want to go out to the bar, have a drink, grab something, or it's like, oh, you know, it's after work, we're grabbing drinks. And then you get there and you're like, okay, I'll go today. And you order a Coke or something. Everybody else is getting, you know, a martini. Why aren't you? And it like the constant having explanations that you have to give are very exhausting. Yeah. And I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, like, I feel that's one of the big reasons why a lot of people struggle quitting is because of other people around them, because it's just, it is everywhere. Like, mummy wine culture has just become, like, I think super toxic. It's just, you know, you see all these like adverts and stuff on Facebook. It's like, mum's had a bad day, have some wine. It's like, no, that's not the answer. How about let's deal with why maybe she's having the bad day and maybe give her better coping techniques and stuff rather than go in this cycle. So it's just, it's thrown in your face. You walk in a card shop and it's like, every single card is like a bottle of bubbly, wine, a glass, cheers. It's like alcohol is literally everywhere. And the maddest thing is, it's a drug, really. It's a drug. Like, there's no point like making it sound prettier than what it is. It is a drug, but obviously it's legal. But it's just everywhere, and it will never be stopped in this or anywhere in the world because of the amount of money that it brings in. I think I've learned so much about it from not drinking alcohol. Like, I've read so many books. You kind of, when you go, lots of people when they go on their sober journeys, you kind of throw yourself into like reading. And I've read quite a few like sober books, and it's just kind of just really like really opened my eyes. Like, the biggest one was The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober, and reading her story and all the, like, her journey to like getting sober, it was like eye-opening, and I could relate to it, and you could see why she really struggled. And I just thought, yeah, no, this is why I'm sticking to it, like 100%, like definitely. And like, it's just, no, since having my son, I didn't really drink nowhere near as much as I did before. But when he goes to his dad's, then like at the weekends, then I would drink, obviously, when I'm by myself. And I could feel myself slipping into the patterns, because before having him, I'd say I probably drank most days then. That was like almost an everyday kind of occurrence, particularly like COVID times. That kind of drove, that drove a lot of people to drink or eating excessively. But I could just see this kind of like pattern emerging again. So it was definitely a no-brainer to stop. But so luckily I've not had lots of people put pressure on me. I mean, I've even been on a night out where I was the only one not drinking, and I was the only one dancing on the tables and had like living my best life, which I just thought was like crazy, because like everyone else around me is all drunk and standing there not dancing, but I was dancing. I'm like, you don't need alcohol to have fun. You can have fun without alcohol. It's fine. Like, it's good.
Yeah. I think that's a really important message to send out into the world and for people to tune in and listen to, and that not only where you're at now, but also the struggles that you've endured to get there, and that you had to restart 4 times, you know, that this isn't, it's not an easy process, but it's doable. And if you commit to making a change, then you can. You can turn your life around. You can build an entirely different life. And go down a completely different path if you have the tenacity to do so. And for me, it's not exactly the same, but it is now 5.5 years ago, I chose to go vegan, and I was also met with a lot of whys, and especially societal pressure. Because I grew up in central Oklahoma and meat capital USA, lots of dairy and meat campaigners there, and none of the restaurants were accommodating. And then even moving to France, where I live in France, is very rural. There's not any options. Like, when you look at menus in France, it's appetizers, meats, desserts. Yeah. Like, there's not even any salads. Yeah. And it's just incredible how constantly I feel pressured you know, to give in to the societal expectation and being a meat eater and not adhering to my own values or desires. And I know why it's not on the same path. It is a similar, like, I'm constantly bombarded by all the advertisements, all the people that tell me I need to eat this, be this way, consume these items. And it's the same for alcohol. Like you said, it's everywhere. And it blew my mind when you mentioned cards, but that's so true, is that it's everywhere. And there, it's constantly trying to get you to drink more, more amounts of alcohol and drinking more often.
Yeah.
And so I understand that pressure of, you know, constantly being told that you should be something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, another thing as well is, like, I knew that, like, drinking alcohol really was, like, impacting more, like, my mental health as well, because it's a depressant, isn't it? Like, a lot of people don't even think about that, because, you know, you get instant gratification when you drink, but then it starts kicking in, and then that's when, like, you get, like, people say anxiety and the joke about it, but that's not really, that is really affecting your mental health, because obviously you get, like, kind of the come down effects and everything else. And I know during my really bad, like, mental health stage with depression, I was drinking a lot to kind of help myself feel better, but then I was actually just stuck in this cycle of feeling worse, like, every day. So it was just, for me, I can just see so many reasons not to drink, and I can't see one reason to drink. I can't see a single one, like, for me. And I'm not going to tell people not to drink. Like, it's their choice. I mean, there's lots of things I could say, I could preach about lots of things, but I choose not to, because, you know, we're all, like, you know, we're all allowed our choices. But I just know, for me personally, it's, I can just say hand on heart that I'm never going back, like, never, because I see the benefits now as well.
Yeah, that's such incredible news, and I'm so proud of you, Colette.
Thank you.
It's just amazing when we really stay strong to our values and our own desires. It's just incredible what we can accomplish. And what we haven't talked about too much yet, but I think is really important in both of our stories, is the power of our mindset. Because you have to be at a certain state and in a certain mental state to have the resilience to continue to say no, and then build on that and say, okay, I'm not being this because of this reason and that reason, and then I want to be better for my son or my daughter, for me, or I want them to be a certain type of way. And it's like creating a generational change. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to know your thoughts about that.
Mindset is massive. Obviously doing what I do, I do it because of going on my own journey. So, like, I found, for me, one of the big things that I was missing was, like, self-love. That was the big thing that I was missing. I think it was, well, it's just the key to a lot of things. And once I started working on that, and then that started, like, shifting my mindset. You said, so, like, working on those boundaries, like, I have very firm boundaries with people about lots of stuff, and alcohol is obviously one of them. I am not afraid to use the word no, like, at all, and not even given it a reason why if I don't want to, but not in a rude way, you know, like, I know how to say, like, be polite, but I don't feel afraid to do that. But before I did, I was like, I think if I was, like, trying to stop drinking before me working on my mindset and my self-love, I would be drinking again now, because I wouldn't have, like, you know, feel like I have the power to say no. But I think daily work, like, working on your mindset daily is, like, so important. But I think, like I said, self-love is definitely, like, the key to that, because it's knowing yourself, knowing all, like, your weaknesses and strengths, working on them, and then it just really helps you to kind of figure out, you know, where you're at and, like, who you are and what you want to be.
Absolutely. I think that's so, so important. And one that really is like an arrow straight to my heart is boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
That was something I had to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really challenging. And even now, like, with people I don't know, or people I even don't know that well, boundaries are relatively easy for me. Where I'm like, no, it's this way. And you don't have any real influence or sway mm-hmm. over me. But where I find boundaries really hard to put into place is like with family members or people that you really care about and that you really are affected by how they react to said boundary. And those are the times where I find difficulty. Mm-hmm. Have you experienced the same? And do you have any advice on how to handle those situations?
This is really going to sound really harsh, but I don't, like, not anymore. Like, I'm at a place where I put myself first. My feelings are literally number one. And as long as I know I'm not being rude in, like, my response to what, like, to the other person, then I can stand by what I'm saying. And I know, and even if I know that maybe they might even possibly be upset because it's not quite what they want to do, but when I take it back to me and like how it's going to make me feel if I'm doing whatever I don't want to do, then that's my driving force. Like, and it has to be that, because the minute I start deviating away from that course, then that's when everything starts falling away. So I've done a lot of work to kind of get to this place where, like, I am literally at the center. Like, I love myself completely to put myself first and ensure that I keep myself sane, really, because, you know, I've been like crazy and depressed and I don't want to go back there. And I feel like once you start slipping on just the small things, then it's a ripple effect, and then where am I going to be? So yeah, I'm pretty tight with them. And they know that as well, and I tell them, you know, I'm very verbal with like my reasons why as well, so, and they understand. I think when you tell people, they get it, but if you don't tell them, they're not going to know, are they? So they're just going to think you're just being mean or whatever for the sake of it. But when you explain, they're a bit like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fair enough.
That's true, and that's a good point, that sometimes people, they put into effect their boundaries, which is fabulous, and it's really important to have boundaries, but they don't do that extra part of explaining why. Mm-hmm. And then they have all these people are that are upset or triggered by their boundary that they put into place, and then they start to slip because then they don't want to be the bad guy, they don't want to be the person that everybody hates or everybody's mad at, or you know, all the things. And so I think that's a really good point that you made, is that you stay firm in your boundaries because you know that if one thing starts to slip, then that could cause the ripple effect to cause greater things to slip, and you don't want to go there. And I think that's the power of being rock bottom, is you know what that feels like.
Yeah.
And so when you have done all of this work and all of these years and had all of this tenacity to move forward, and then you start to feel yourself kind of inching back, it's like a red glaring light in your face, and like, oh my gosh, like you have to do something else, because you know so intimately what that rock bottom is like. Yeah. That you refuse, like you have, it's like this innate refusal to go back to that space.
Yeah, definitely. So it's just like a driving force, isn't it? I think lots of people can relate. If you've been through bad times, you don't want to go back there, but so lots do, and it's because, I think, not just to do with boundaries, but you need to continuously work on whatever it is that you've worked on and just stick to it, because you can't let your guard down, even when you think you're in the most amazing place, because it only takes one thing to knock you, and then that's it, you're just going to slide down. That's why so many people end up, you know, relapsing again, like with alcohol, or like, you know, getting depressed or anxious, because like they've like let things slide. So we have to continuously work on ourselves, like all the time, even when you're feeling 100%.
I think that you have hit that right on the nail, and that's such an important message. And I know that you do that within your business as well, like that is part of your programs, and because in your social media post, I can see it, I can feel your passion towards helping people and helping them recover in the same way that you have. Do you want to tell us more about your business and what you do?
Yeah, so with the coaching side, like predominantly it's mainly mums that I work with, although women as well, but not so much men. I can work with anyone, but like mainly it's women. And it's really I really help them to, firstly, like know that they're more than just a mum. So that's really where the name comes from. It's like Mind Over Mama is my like name. And yes, it's a play on the words mind over matter, but actually it's also like, you know, our mind, we're our mind over like a mum, like we are the forefront. So you have to put yourself first before being a mum. And I really help women kind of feel and understand that, because you get, like you said, you get lost, don't you, when you become a mum. And if you've already had past struggles and stuff as well, it's like, it's difficult. It's just like, you just start slipping down and losing yourself. So I really help them kind of reconnect with themselves again. Self-love is really at the core of every single thing that I do, because I just think it's so, so important. You know, I ask like quite a lot of times I ask my clients, you know, what's like something that you do like just for yourself that you love? And they're like, I don't know. And that's like quite a common answer. And then that's quite like a shame, because it's like, you have to be doing stuff for yourself. And it doesn't have to be go and get an expensive haircut and all the other stuff. It could just be just doing stuff like for yourself at home. But I just think if we're not prioritizing ourselves, we're doing our family a disservice, really, because if we're not 100%, we're not going to be giving 100% because we're not feeling it. So it's like, we have to be putting ourselves first. So it's a big thing that I focus on. It's just, I love seeing the transformation in women. Like I've had women that have come to me who've like just felt like really low, just like no confidence, no self-esteem or anything. And within a few weeks, they've like literally transformed. They've come to me with ideas in like the later sessions. And I'm like, whoa, like, who are you? And they've gone to set up like Instagram pages, like doing like fashion pages and stuff, when before they didn't even like photos of themselves. And I'm like, look at you, like, you're amazing. And it's just because they've just started like loving themselves a little bit more. And it's just, sometimes I think when you say like self-love and some of the things I say to do, it sounds like simple, but then it's not, they are simple things, but if you're not doing them, like it's like, it can feel like a big, huge task, can't it? So, but it is very, they are easy things that you can do, like implement like every single day, like you can like literally raise your self-love game. And I think it's just so important. We just forget who we are and like forget to do all the stuff that we like love to do. And it's just so, so important. I mean, I even say it's from a personal perspective, because when I was after my depression, I had a couple of sessions of counseling, which helped a little bit, but I still felt there was something missing. And then I worked with a coach. I saw like an advert on Facebook, and within a couple of, she asked me some of the similar questions, and I was the same. Like there was things I just forgotten about. I mean, I hadn't even like stopped painting my nails, like just simple things in my house, like cooking myself healthy meals, having just 5 minutes to myself, all these little things, but I just stopped doing them. And it just took someone to go, have you done anything for yourself today? And it's like, oh no, I haven't. And once you start doing more stuff for yourself and putting yourself first, like you'll see the transformation. Like it's just, it makes such a difference. It really, really does.
Oh my goodness, Colette, I met you like 3 years ago. So much of what you just said is what I experienced. And I felt completely lost. When my daughter was a year old, and I hadn't lived in France for a year and a half at that point. I didn't speak French very well. And all of my attention was on my daughter, because she had just turned one, and my daughter at that time still didn't sleep through the night. And I was breastfeeding all the nine yards, and I was just constantly mama, mama, yeah. Mama. And I love, for all of you listeners that are tuning in, she has her Mind Over Mama podcast. Mm-hmm. So, and Colette will let me know, and I'll let you guys know in the show notes where you can listen to that as well. And I just feel like I could have used you so much 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, mm-hmm. because I was that person. I was that ideal client that was completely lost, that was totally inundated in motherhood and had no other identity. And my previous identities had been taken from me, not necessarily because I became a mother, but because I moved countries, then I became a mother. And I'm like, who am I? What does Rachel want? What does she love? What does she even like? Like, does she have any thoughts of her own anymore? And, you know, to people that haven't experienced that, that sounds kind of crazy in a sense of mm-hmm. like, how would she not know who she was? But because when everything is taken from you that you've ever known, for me moving countries and then becoming a mother, stepping into an unknown that I knew nothing about, it was like, every part of me was lost. And it took coming back to my business, back to my earring business, and actually connecting with people again and realizing that like I wanted more to in my life than just talking to my one-year-old every day and my husband. And I just think you're doing incredible, empowering, like transformational work.
Right, thank you. Yeah, it's so easy to get lost, I think. You know, there's no manual when you have a child, never mind then when you move countries and stuff as well. But it's just, it's a big thing. I think people should give you like a little bit of a heads up, just like, you know, things are going to change. Like it's going to be a new normal, like, you know, and that they should give you like a little list of things to say, you know, make sure you do take some like 5 minutes for yourself, just something, but give them a little tip manual. So then you're prepared, because it's very easy to just slip into, like you said, that feeling of like just being lost. I mean, even me now, like Xavier is two, but like it can be hard work sometimes to not focus on me. So like one of the things that I do is like just, it's super simple, but when I put him down for his nap, because he still naps at the minute, which is just great. I know that's going to stop soon, but like for now I'm like, yes, I'm going to like enjoy that. But the first thing I do is, as soon as he's gone down for a nap, I make myself a cup of coffee and I sit down and I just have that cup of coffee just to myself. I don't do any work. I don't do answer any emails, no messages, but I just sit and I have that time to myself. And that makes such a difference from my day, because before, like when me and his dad first split up, I wasn't doing that and I was feeling really stressed. And as soon as he went down for a nap, I was like, oh my God, I've got to do the housework and I've got to do all the stuff. And I'll get that coffee in a bit. But that bit didn't come because of all the other things. And then he probably woke up early. So now by just doing this, that's like a guaranteed 5 to 10 minutes every single day that is just mine. I get more because like I'm quite organized and stuff now, but they're definitely guaranteed. I look forward to that hot cup of coffee as well. Because I mean, how often do you get a hot coffee as like a mum, right?
Absolutely. Yes. And I think that is a wonderful change that you've made. And it's also a very easy change that those that are tuning in can make, is when your child is down for a nap, you know, grab a coffee, grab a tea, do something you like. You know, if you paint your nails, then take 10 minutes, paint your nails, get them done. And, you know, they'll be dry before your son or daughter gets up. And because for me, what I've done in the morning is I'm an early riser kind of gal. I get up at 5:30 in the morning. But the first thing I do is kind of take some downtime. I drink water. I know I'm not the fun one, but I like really cold water. So I get it out of the fridge and I just kind of like sit and rest, like let my body like kind of come down and come to and like, okay, I'm ready. And before, and then sometimes I do yoga, sometimes I don't. It just kind of depends on the day. But it just gives me some space and mind for me. Yeah. And then I go into like my daily tasks for my businesses and stuff. But another reason I get up early is for that simple me time.
Yeah.
Is even though I'm working the majority of that time, it's like I'm choosing to work. I get to get up and go and do things on my own and sit in that silence. And nobody needs me. Nobody's calling my name. Nobody's asking me 7,000 questions.
Yeah, yeah.
All the mothers that are tuning in, they totally know. Yeah. And if you have multiple children, it's even worse. There's like 20,000 moms in the
day.
We have to remind each other, mom to mom, is that we need to take time for ourselves.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I love a good morning routine. I love journaling and, like, doing, like, meditation and stuff. And I did try and get up early before Xavier was awake to do that, but I'm a morning person and he is a morning person. So he now like wakes around 5 or something. And I'm like, I'm not getting up before that. Like we're not doing that. So I've just learned to adjust. And I kind of do that stuff while he's eating breakfast now. So I'm still in the same room as him, but I still do my morning routine, but he's like around. And sometimes he joins in, to be honest. So I do like affirmations and sometimes he like repeats a couple of them, which is super cute, or like he meditates, or if I've got my eyes closed, he's like, open your eyes, and it's just dead cute. But he's kind of involved in that, so I'm still getting to do my stuff I want to do, but involving him. But yeah, the coffee bit is, for me, that's my time at the minute. And like I said, I don't know how long that's going to last with nap, so I'm going to like hold on for that for like literally as long as I possibly can.
Absolutely, and you should. And I know that when that time is no longer, then you'll create a different time and space. Yeah. You know, before you know it, when that time is gone, then it'll be time for him to go to school And then life will change again. And then it changes again when they come home for the summertime. And my daughter, this is the second week that she's been home. The first week that she's been home for summer break. And I was really nervous for like the last 2 weeks. I'm like, what am I going to do? How am I going to manage this time? And because it's that like fear of change of like, okay, well, we were doing good here, but now everything has to change again, or I have to figure out ways to involve you in different kinds of ways. And so I think it's important that we raise awareness around the fact, you know, that things change, that, and to take time for us is still important, and that self-love is really crucial to creating a life that you love, that's full of joy, that's full of purpose, and being able to handle the stresses of being a business owner and the highs and the lows, because it is absolutely not a linear path. It's not like, okay, learn a new skill, climbing up the ladder just a little bit more. It's not like that at all. It's like you learn a new skill and then you're kicked back 3 prongs on the ladder because it's the summer and no one wants to buy your products, or you know, whatever the case is. And I think it's really important that we put those messages center stage and in front of the world.
Yeah, and like I said, definitely like about the change thing, I think for some women, I think like if they've gone on maternity leave and when they come back, they think everything's still going to be the same. I think for most, it's not going to be. And I think you just have to kind of accept that it's not going to be. And if you go into it with like kind of an open mind, like that, like it's not going to be, and there's probably going to be changes, you'll find it a lot easier. Because I hear a lot of people that struggle going back to work because they expect everything to be exactly the same, and it's not going to be, especially when you're working at home as well. Like you said, you've got your child at home, you've got to juggle, and you just have to kind of accept that. Like when I had Xavier, like before I had Xavier, I used to work like every single day. Like that's what I was doing. I mean, I was even working when I was in the hospital bed getting induced. Like that's how much stuff I was doing. But like then afterwards, like I realized very quickly, I'd say within the first 2 weeks, I'm like, yeah, I can't do this. Like this, it's not going to be an everyday thing now. It's going to be structured. It's going to be different. I'm going to have days off to me. I'm going to do stuff. And I've just changed my whole working routine. And I think it's just, you've got to be flexible. Yeah, you have to be flexible to the changes.
That is really important. That is really, really important. Quilla, I would like to ask you just one more question before we head off. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to someone who is trying to find their path and purpose in life?
Firstly, it would definitely be don't worry about what anyone else is doing. Like at all, like do not compare yourself to a single person. Like nothing on social media is as it seems. Even what your friend Sally down the road is doing probably isn't what it seems, because they're probably putting on a brave front because they don't want to like show their weakness. So it's just focus on you, and just really connect with yourself. Like know what you want, like yourself personally. I would say that's definitely like what I would do. Just go inwards is my advice. I spend a lot of time reflecting and like journaling, meditating to really know exactly like how I'm feeling and what I want. And that really like helps like me like know where I want to go forward.
I think that's really important for people to hear and to focus on, is to go inward, because so much of our society and people tell you that you need to get acceptance from other people. Like, oh well, you know, I'm motivated when my boss is proud of me, or I'm motivated when I do a good job at a sport. And yet when those things are taken away from you, whether that be by accident or on purpose, then people are left and they are lost. They don't know what defines them anymore. And so I think the advice to go inwards to begin with is really revolutionary and really important, because if you're always stepping in the direction of which you are aligned, then even if something flies off the rails, you still are within your desires, your purpose, your focus, and you can handle those more easily.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Like, I know exactly what I want, and like, I know I'm very aware of like how I feel and stuff. And like, yeah, I've had lots of obstacles thrown in my way, but I've still kept like on track, because I know where I'm heading, and it's like where where I feel I'm very big on energy and emotions and stuff, and like that's, I stay connected to myself, and it's helped massively. I don't compare myself to anyone else, because even if someone's doing a similar thing to me, there's no point, because we're all individual and we're all gonna have our own way of doing something, aren't we, as well? So it's just, you just need to stay focused on you and the rest will fall in line perfectly. Like, trust the process, trust the universe, and it will definitely work out.
I thank you so much, Colette, for being on today and being on Step Into Your Sunshine. It has been an absolute honor of mine to have you here and to dive into your story and for you to share your very inspirational ways of living and helping other women prosper.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome to talk to you.
For all of our listeners, we have new episodes on Mondays and Thursdays, 8 p.m. UTC time, 7 p.m. UK time, and 1 p.m. US Central Standard Time. And I will talk to all of you guys very soon.